Excellent, excellent. Well, good morning and welcome. For those of you who don't know, right now we're in the middle of a conversation called Don't Laugh. And I know some of you are very disappointed because as we begin today, we're beginning without the dad jokes. But we are celebrating baptisms all morning long, and to be honest with you, that's a much bigger celebration than dad jokes. And if we get more excited about dad jokes than baptism, then we have a bigger problem that we need to talk about. But we're celebrating all morning, and for those of you who haven't been with us, we've been having a lot of fun over the last couple weeks, because as we walked into this year, we began with a question, a very simple question. Is it possible to enjoy God? Is it possible to enjoy this journey with Him? And we've been sitting down in this passage that we find in John chapter 15, verse 9 through 11, where Jesus has brought to us this incredible promise, this incredible hope. Let me take you back there. It says, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Remain in my love. When you obey my commandments, you remain in my love, just as I obey my Father's commandments and remain in his love. I have told you these things so that you'll be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. He says, everything that I've been walking you guys through, all that I've been preparing you for, listen, this is so that your joy will overflow, so that you can experience my joy, but not just experience my joy, but that your joy will overflow. And we've been looking at it and saying, okay, what does that look like? How do we know that? How do we experience that? And as we've been looking at that, we've been walking through three different principles. And remember, this wasn't just important to Jesus. This was also important to those who knew him best. When Paul is looking at, okay, is God going to keep me on this journey or not? He says, the reason why I believe God is going to keep me alive. Let me take you back to that passage as well. Philippians 1:25. Knowing this, I'm convinced that I will remain alive so I can continue to help all of you grow and experience the joy of your faith. The reason that I'm being kept alive is for you to know and experience the joy of your faith. You understand your faith, but I don't know if you're actually experiencing the joy of that. And so I'm working for you to know and experience that. And I believe God's going to keep me alive for that reason. This was a big deal. And so we've just kind of sat down in this and said, okay, what does that look like? And we've kind of unpacked, what is it? For those who knew Jesus, what did they teach about joy? What do the scriptures come to us with concerning joy? And we've seen God leading us in a couple of different ways. The first one we talked about a couple weeks ago, where God says, you need to detach your joy from the things that you normally connect it to, from the things that are insignificant, and you need to attach it to those things which are eternal and significant. You need to attach your joy to my presence. You need to attach your joy to your salvation. You need to attach your joy to your eternity. You need to attach your joy to what I'm doing in your life for you to become like Jesus, to the mission that I have you on. Last week, we built on that and said, listen, if we're going to know God's joy, we have to change our mindset about obedience. We got to get serious about obedience and change the way that we look at righteousness and goodness and get excited about that as opposed to believing the lie that it's robbing us of life. Then as we come together this week, we're wrapping up this conversation with one final principle that I think the scriptures teach us is crucial, critical to us knowing his joy, to us overflowing with his joy. You see, we live in a world that's filled with idols. We live in a culture that's all about idols, and we are constantly, we live our lives pursuing all these different idols, and we pursue the idol of wealth, and we think, man, if I can just be wealthy, then I'm going to be happy. If I could just have enough money, I'm going to be secure. And an idol is anything that we pursue to give us value or security or satisfaction. And we do. We live our lives chasing these different things in all these different ways. And so maybe it's not wealth. Maybe it's the accumulation of things. If I can just have the things that I crave, if I can just have enough stuff, then I'm going to be happy. Then I'm going to be satisfied. Then I'm going to be valuable. Or sometimes we pursue it in relationships. And if I can just get married, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be valuable. Our culture is full of idols. And if you've been a part of Hoboken Grace, you've heard us talk about this before, how we pursue idols. And God's constantly in our lives. God's constantly in our lives trying to call us out of that. Even when you look at the passage that we talked about a couple weeks ago when we were attaching our joy to the wrong thing. Let me take you back there. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. It says, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all that we need for our enjoyment." In this passage, he's calling us away from an idol. He's saying, listen, don't attach your joy to this. Don't worship this. Don't worship your money because it's unreliable. It's not going to satisfy you. It's not going to bring what you thought it was going to bring. And he's constantly calling us out of those idols and calling us back to him and saying, listen, that's not going to satisfy you. Only I can satisfy you. That's not going to make you valuable. The way that I gave my life for you is what makes you valuable. He's calling us out of those idols. And typically, that's the conversation that we have about idols. Listen, these things aren't going to actually make you happy, and God's calling you out of them and back to him. But there's more to the idol conversation than that. There's more to the idol conversation than that. Because you see, we don't just pursue idols for what they can give us. We don't just pursue idols for what they can directly bring to us. We also pursue idols because we want to be the idol. We also pursue idols because we, not only do we pursue them because we think, okay, if I worship them, if I give my life to them, then they're going to give me value and security. That's not the only reason we do it. We also pursue them because if we can accumulate them, then others will worship us. You see, there's something that I know about you, because it's true about me as well, and that is this. You want to be admired. That's the nicest way that I can say it. The other words that you might use for that is that you want to be envied. You want to be worshipped. What we want is we want other people to look at us and say, I want to be like them. And we don't just pursue idols for what they can give to us directly. We pursue idols because if I can accumulate what you worship, then you will worship me. I don't just want to be wealthy for what wealth can bring me. I want to be wealthy because you want to be wealthy. And then when I get wealthy, you're going to want to be me. There's more to the conversation about idols. And we accumulate them not just for what they can give us, but we accumulate them because we want to be the idol. This is everywhere in our culture. This is why our culture is so driven by celebrity. We want to be celebrities. We strive. We're driven for it. Why? Because we want people to want to be us. And some of you are here and say, no, I don't want anything to do with that celebrity. I know someone like this in my life. He completely shuns celebrity, shuns anything to do with celebrity, shuns the entire idea of celebrity. He actually wants to be worshipped for it. He does. Some of you don't want to be worshipped because of how you're a celebrity. Some of you want to be worshipped because of how humble you are. Or you want to be worshipped because of the impact that you're making in the world. It can drive us to good things. But at the heart of it is the desire to become the idol, to be worshipped. It's not a new thing. It's been around since the very beginning. As a matter of fact, the temptation to Adam and Eve, at the core of it, was the desire to be worshipped. Genesis chapter 3, "For God knows, in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God." He says, no, you don't have to worship him anymore. People will worship you. It's one of the core temptations in our life. In the scriptures, all temptation is wrapped up into three different categories. John breaks it down for us in 1 John chapter 2. He says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." You can take all of the temptation that you experience, and you can sum it up into three different categories. The first is the lust of the flesh. It's the desire for pleasure. And it doesn't just have to do with sex. It's the desire to feel. I want to feel a certain way. I want to make sure that I feel this way. It's the desire for pleasure. The second is the lust of the eyes. It's the desire for possession. When you go back to the temptations of Jesus, there are these three things. The first one is the desire to feel. Turn this rock into bread. End your hunger. It's the desire for pleasure. The second is the desire for possession. He takes him and says, "I'll give you all of this. Everything that you see, it can be yours." It's the desire to possess. I want to have. And then the pride of life, which is the desire for position. He says, "Throw yourself off the top of the temple. They'll catch you. Everybody will know who you are." It's the desire for power and position. It's the desire to be worshipped. Throw yourself off. They'll worship you. It's been a part of this since the very beginning, the desire to be worshipped, to become the idol. And the reason why we pursue the idols is not just for what they can give us, but for how we will be worshipped because we have them. And because of this, we live our lives in the midst of an idol trade, and we're constantly selling them to each other. Because I don't just want it to be my idol, I want it to be your idol too. Because in order for you to worship me, it has to be your idol. And so I understand that traveling the world doesn't make me happy, but I want for you to think it makes me happy, because then you'll think more of me. Social media has given us the best platform for this. Look at me. Look how happy I am. You happy? No. But I want other people to think I'm happy. And I want them to want to be me. Do you want to be you? No. But I want them to want to be me. And we spend our lives selling each other idols. We do it professionally. This is what marketing is all about. We don't sell products anymore, we just sell idols. Next week, millions of people are going to watch the Super Bowl. Millions upon millions of people. Many of them not to watch the game, but to watch the... Excellent. Those commercials are not going to tell you anything about the product they're selling. They will tell you absolutely nothing about the product they're selling. You will not learn anything about how it works. You won't learn anything about how reliable it is. They may throw in some J.D. Power Awards or whatever over here, but that's not what they're selling. They're not selling you a product. They're selling you an idol. They're selling you a feeling. People are going to look at you this way if you have this. People are going to worship you this way if you have this. They're not selling you anything. Dilly dilly. What does that have to do with beer? We don't sell products. We sell idols. And not only do we do it professionally, we do it personally. And so we realize being married doesn't make you happy, but we continue to sell the idol of it. And it's destroying us. I remember the time that I was able to see this most clearly was when I went to Africa. And when I went to Africa for the first time, the people who were with me, they were devastated by the poverty. What devastated me wasn't the poverty. What devastated me was that they'd bought into our idols. What devastated me is that we'd sold them our idols and they'd bought it. Being poor doesn't make you miserable. Being poor and believing that wealth will make you happy makes you miserable. I lived a lot of my life being very, 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 very poor. Being poor doesn't make you miserable. But when you buy the idol of wealth, it destroys you. And I looked around and I saw how through TV and all these different ways, how we'd sold them the idol that you could be happy if you could be wealthy like Americans, because we're so happy. And it broke my heart. You don't find joy and you don't find happiness because you find the right idol. You don't find joy and you don't find happiness because you accumulate the idols that allow people to worship you. The scriptures come to us with a very different idea. The scriptures come to us and say, no. Joy is found when you realize that you don't actually need the idols. This is what Paul discovered, Philippians chapter 4. He says, "How I praise the Lord that you are concerned about me again. I know you have always been concerned for me, but you didn't have the chance to help me. Not that I was ever in need, for I've learned to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." Paul says, "You see, I've learned something. I've learned something amazing. And the amazing thing is I don't need the idols anymore." He said, I've learned something that so very few people did, that it doesn't matter what my circumstance is, I still have the joy. It doesn't matter what the situation is, I still have the peace and the love of God. It doesn't matter what the circumstances is, I'm still able to know His joy. I'm still able to be content. And it doesn't matter whether I have a lot or it doesn't matter if I have nothing at all. It doesn't matter whether I feel good or whether I've just been almost beaten to death. It doesn't matter whether things are going well or whether things are falling apart. He says, it doesn't matter. I've learned the secret. And when he comes to the end, it says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He's not saying you can do whatever you want. He's not saying you can tackle whatever obstacle. He's talking specifically about this. What he's saying is this: I've learned that it doesn't matter what the circumstance is. I can know His joy. This is something that we've been talking about for the last couple months, that what God has for you, what God has in store for you, is above circumstance. It's beyond circumstance. This is what Paul's telling you. It doesn't matter what the circumstance is. He says, you guys, you keep thinking that the joy is based on circumstance. You keep thinking that the joy is based on what's happening around you. He says, but I've learned it doesn't have anything to do with that. He says, I figured it out. I don't need the idols. He said, I figured out that I can step out of it, that I don't need them anymore. One of the things that drove people crazy about Jesus, and one of the reasons why they turned on Jesus, is that Jesus refused to change the physical circumstances. And as he moved through the countryside, he healed, but he wasn't changing the physical circumstances. And they wanted him to change the physical circumstances. They wanted him to overthrow Rome. They wanted him to end poverty. They wanted him to change the physical circumstances. But Jesus, and when you look at Jesus' life, when Jesus gives his life and goes back to heaven, those physical circumstances are exactly the same. They're still under the oppression of the Roman Empire. There's still sickness. There's still poverty. The circumstances, the physical circumstances are exactly the same. Why didn't he change them? Because that wasn't the problem. Jesus is saying, you think that your joy is tied to the physical circumstances. You keep believing the lie that your joy is found in the physical circumstances. But what I have for you is above circumstances, beyond circumstance. This is why those who knew Jesus, when they're trying to teach us this, they say things like, this is available to you. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're Jew or Greek, whether you're slave or free, whether you're Gentile or Jew. It doesn't matter. Whether you're male or female, it doesn't matter. Because it's available to you no matter what the circumstance is. And just in case you look at this and say, Chris, what about the really difficult circumstances? When James writes to the church and says, listen, I want for you to know God's joy. When James writes to the church in James chapter 1 and he says, I want for you to choose joy. He's writing to a church. He's writing to a church that is watching their family members be put to death because they follow Jesus. And he's saying, even in that circumstance, you can know this. He's saying, even in that circumstance, you can know God's joy. He's not just talking about small things. He's not just talking about insignificant problems. He's not talking about you had a bad day at work. He's talking about some of the worst pain you could ever experience in your life. And he's saying, you can know joy in the middle of that. You can know joy in the middle of that. But you have to give up the idol trade. Do you know why the early church was persecuted? As the church is spreading, do you know why there were certain cities that tried to drive the church out? There were two main reasons. The first one, was that the religious leaders at the time, specifically the Jewish religious leaders, looked at the growth of the church and said, this is going to destroy us. We've got to push them out. We've got to end this Jesus thing. The second one was a little more interesting. The second one had to do with economy. The second reason they experienced persecution is because most of these major cities, their economy revolved around temples. And in the middle of these cities, there would be temples where a certain god would be worshipped. And not only would that god be worshipped, but then people would come and they would worship that god. And all around the temple, they would be selling little versions of this god, mini versions of this god, little idols that you could take home and continue to worship this god. But as the church began to explode, all of a sudden people stopped buying the idols. And the economies of these cities began to crumble. And they looked at the church and said, you're ruining our city. We've got to get rid of this thing. You see, the message of Jesus interrupts. It disrupts the idol trade. It did it back then. And it should do it today. The message of Jesus at its core disrupts the idol trade because it comes to us and says, you don't need it. You don't need it. And as the church began to spread, and as they began to experience the joy of Jesus, they realized, I don't need it. I don't need it. Let me ask you something. What do you need? What do you need in order for you to know joy? What do you need? In order for you to be happy, what do you need? Now be honest with yourself, because there should be two conversations happening in your head. One should be, what do I actually need? The other should be, what do I think I need? Because for some of you, I asked you, what do you need? And a piece of furniture popped into your head. Or a number in your bank account popped into your head. Or a position at your job popped into your head. Or an outfit, or a relationship, or a child. But what do you actually need? For those who have been declared righteous without working for it, for those who every moment of every day have the Spirit of God living within them, for those who know that they will spend every moment of eternity with Him, for those who've been called into a mission as His ambassadors, a mission that is crucial and essential, a mission that matters every moment of their lives, for those who know that their God is constantly working for them to become more like Jesus and to know His love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness, for those who've been declared righteous without working for it, what do you need? What do you need to be happy? What do you need to experience the joy of God? James chapter 1. Probably one of the most powerful passages on joy that there is. Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow, so let it grow. And when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. When you engage God on this journey of joy, and what he's writing, when he's writing to them in James, he's saying, listen, if you will engage me on this journey of joy, even in the circumstances that you're walking through, if you'll engage him in this, and if you will trust him to attach your joy to that which is significant, and you will faithfully follow him, he says, when your faith has a chance to be tested in this, it will develop endurance in you, and you're going to discover something about joy, and that is this: you don't need anything to have it, because you have Jesus. Because you have your salvation, and because you have your eternity, and because you have the mission that he's called you into, and because of the fact that you know that he's constantly working for you to become like him, he says, as you walk into this, you're going to discover one of the most beautiful and powerful things about what Jesus has done for you, and that is this: you don't need anything else to have his joy. Listen to me. Some of you are here and you're exploring this thing. This is available to you today. See, Jesus doesn't come and say, this is available for those who have it all together. He says, this is available to anyone who will trust me. I want to lead you into this if you'll trust me. And I know you've been spending your life trying to chase satisfaction, chase joy in all these other places, and it's leaving you wanting. Jesus comes to you and says, I want for you to know my joy. But he doesn't invite you into it so you can chase it. He invites you into it and says, you can know it right now. What do you need? We believe we need all these different things. The journey of choosing joy and following Christ in this is a journey of every time that feeling comes up that says, oh, I need that. If I'm going to be happy, I need that. It's the journey of saying, I don't need it. I don't need it. You should say that to yourself over 1,000 times a day, because you're tempted over 1,000 times a day to connect your joy to something else. I don't need it. I don't need it. And it's not just with the small things. I don't need for my spouse to always respect me in order for me to be happy. I don't need for everything to go well with my kids' school in order for me to be happy. In order for me to know God's joy, I don't need that. And no matter what the circumstances are, I can still know His joy. But you have to decide in your circumstance. As James, the brother of Jesus, is writing to us, he says, you have to decide in your circumstance to choose joy and faith, to choose to attach your joy to something else, to choose joy and faith, and to faithfully run after that. And as you do that, your endurance is going to grow. And you're going to discover something incredibly powerful and remarkably beautiful. I don't need anything else. And you can't take it from me. I don't need anything else. And you can't take it from me. And you can throw me in jail. And you can beat me to the last inch of my life. And I can go through some of the most painful and difficult things you can imagine. And I will still know the joy of God, because I have been declared righteous without working for it. I will spend all of my eternity with Him. I have been given a mission that is eternally significant. And there's not a moment of my life that I am without Him. I need nothing else to know it, and you cannot take it from me. Will you pray with me? Father, the idols in our lives, they're so intertwined with who we are and the lives that we live. It's so deeply rooted in us that in order for us to know joy, that we have to have these things. Father, I pray that we would be able to see the truth. The truth of the idol trade that we live in. The truth of the reality that what you have for us is beyond, it's above circumstance. I pray that we would be able to see the truth. That no matter what circumstance we find ourselves in, whether we have much or whether we have nothing, whether we are in pain or whether we know pleasure, that we can know your joy. Father, I pray that we would in faith attach our joy to that which you've called us to attach it to. I pray that as the circumstances in our life change, that we would consistently choose that. We would consistently pursue those things as the source of our joy. I pray that we would awaken to the truth that Paul and James and those who knew you knew. That we need nothing because we have you. And that because of that, we might know your joy. That because of that, your joy might shine out in this city for others to be able to see it in our lives and be drawn to the truth of who you actually are. In Jesus' name, amen.